Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, welcome to Out of the Blue from the Block M Podcast Network, part of the Fan First Sports Network, a podcast of diabolical weirdness forged in the fires of 90s sitcoms. I am Jared Stormer of MazinBrew.com. With me, as always, is Andy Bailey, my hetero life mate, also of MazinBrew.com. Andy, you bashful but credible source of Michigan history and beer knowledge. How the hell are you, sir?
Doing good, man. I mean, you and I were just talking off air. We're already into week six. Like, we got to enjoy this. It's going to be gone before we know it.
I know. As much as that excites me, because we've got some great games coming up, you've got to take a moment and, like Ferris Bueller, just sit back and enjoy it. Drink it in, because that Nebraska game was, I would say, the most enjoyable watch through for me. I know you were nursing through a hangover, but as far as enjoyable watches, was that your most enjoyable thus far?
Oh, yeah, 100%. One of the most enjoyable of the last 2 years. Like, I think a lot of games from last year, it was kind of like a grind for a little bit, and then it gets, and Michigan pulls away late. Like, this one, never in doubt, comfortable, fun, enjoyable, memorable, exciting plays. Like, really had a little bit of everything.
Yep, you got to soak it in, because we spend so much of the year just waiting for Michigan football, and it just doesn't seem like enough. I would be a full proponent of going, like, give me an extra game, or can we televise practices? Like, you got to give me something. I'm like a crack addict here. Need it. Speaking of crack addicts, we're going to fiend out here for an extra 25 minutes on this podcast. You get a little extra Out of the Blue this week and during the season. Broke down the Nebraska game in the previous podcast. We're going to talk about Minnesota in this one. Also want to talk through some Wolverines in the NFL. Anything else that you wanted to touch on? Anything that caught your eye this week, sir?
Now, nothing that's happened, but what's coming up? I do want to take a look at the college football landscape at large before we get off tonight.
Yeah. All right. Let's do it. What do we got going for us in week six? Oh, my goodness.
So there's some good games here, some sleepy upsets to keep an eye on. You have Purdue's high-potent passing offense going against Iowa for the real sickos out there. I'm going to love this game. You have Alabama, Texas A&M. A&M's given Bama problems in the past. Could they eliminate them from playoff contention this weekend? Syracuse at North Carolina. Dino Babers has that team rolling, so it'd be something to watch out for. Washington State, one of your and I's just collective favorite teams to watch from a distance, and Cam Ward. They're going down to UCLA this weekend. Marshall, one of the undefeated teams from my home state, going at NC State. Kind of cool to see him keep that going, pull an upset. Rutgers at Wisconsin, another sickos game that you and I are going to be locked in for at noon next week. Maryland at Ohio State, we talked in the previous pod about that. LSU at Missouri. But I think the headliner of the week has to be the Red River rivalry, Oklahoma and Texas in the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah, really excited for that. Oklahoma starting to turn things around after a disastrous first season under Brent Venables, looking a lot more confident. Dylan Gabriel's been really solid at quarterback for them, but the defense has improved. So they could definitely give Texas a challenge. Texas is by no means infallible, unbeatable. I predicted them to have a loss going into this too. Of course, if Oklahoma beats them, they're just going to swap positions. They're going to move Oklahoma way up in the rankings should they pull that victory out. Let's not sleep on Kentucky, Georgia.
That's, I think, Georgia. Right, yes. Thank you.
Yeah, I was going to say, because Georgia got caught napping a little bit against Auburn. If you get caught napping against Kentucky, they're a way better team. Their running back last week went off. Yes. I don't know if you looked at our fantasy league, the dude put up like 60 something points. He's a beast. It's like Raheem Davis or something.
Ray
like that.
Davis.
Ray Davis. Simple, elegant name. It's at Georgia at night, so there's no way they're overlooking this game, but definitely need to keep an eye on it.
Yeah, Kentucky, really good at running the ball, really good at stopping it, not so good at stopping the pass. So this is going to be a really interesting game, putting a lot on a young starter's shoulders for Georgia and seeing what they can do in this game. I'm really intrigued by it, man. Like, Georgia, they always come in with a stiff game plan against the Bulldogs, and whether it lasts for a half or three quarters, like, I think it's going to be at least a tight first half.
Yeah, I'm with you. And the night games are certainly some of the most intriguing. While Michigan is playing Minnesota, you'll also have Notre Dame at Louisville. Louisville currently under the tutelage of former Purdue head coach Jeff Braun, who's off to a great start, has them ranked number 25, even though that should be Maryland. I digress. Another tough test for Notre Dame, who does not have an easy schedule despite being not in a conference. Got to give them to him there. Arkansas, Mississippi going at 7:30. So, yeah, a lot of good night games. The nightcap Arizona at USC. Jed Fish, he's got one in him. I don't know if he's quite there yet to pull this upset at USC at night. Not that the folks in LA are going to show out for this one, but he's getting close. Just keep an eye on Jed Fish.
I mean, he just played Washington to within one touchdown last week. I mean, it was a home game, but it's like, these are the kind of wacky Pac-12 games that, like, you could see a team like USC overlooking, and like, maybe it's tight in the fourth quarter. There's a mistake one way or another.
Anyone getting upset this week? Who do you got your eye on? I was definitely wrong about my Pittsburgh take. So my bad.
I like Texas A&M over Alabama.
Whoa. I never buy into A&M. Every year they try and tell me A&M's good. And I get it that Alabama can't really do much on offense, and the defense is suspect, which is wild. Suspect for Alabama. I just can't get there with Texas A&M. Let me see.
It's not that I think
Oklahoma over Texas isn't a huge upset, but I could definitely see that happening.
Yeah, it's not really that I think like A&M is that good, but like 2 years ago in College Station, they famously got Alabama. They were kind of down that year. I just think Jimbo Fisher, it's just one of those games he's always going to like give Saban fits, kind of like how Hugh Freeze, when he used to be at Ole Miss, would give Saban fits. I think it's one of those guys. They score out really well in the S&P. They're in the top 10. I just think it's in College Station again. I think it just ripe for an upset.
Yeah, I like it. I don't hate it. Notre Dame needs to be careful. If they're going to keep all these games low scoring and close towards the end, like you're ripe for an upset any week. So keep it close at Louisville with Jeff Braun. Anything could happen there. Notre Dame certainly could get another loss on their schedule. Maybe Arkansas over Ole Miss after an emotional win for Ole Miss over LSU. Keep an eye on that one.
I got one for you.
Hit me.
We're thinking about Rutgers.
Who's Rutgers got this week?
Wisconsin in Madison.
Oh, 100% I could see that. Yeah, not even an upset. Loving this Rutgers team.
You and I are so bored just because we like Shiano and how physical this team is. Like the way Washington State pushed around Wisconsin's front, like I think Rutgers can replicate that.
I love it. You and I are all aboard this Rutgers team. We're sickos at this point. Yes, in our old age, the more we're just like, oh, you know, did you see what that left guard was able to do there on that pin and pull? That was delightful. Smoking out of a corn cob pipe. And I already mentioned Maryland versus Ohio State. Give way more respect to this Maryland team than do most, but they've got the elements to pull an upset. They've got a quarterback that can complete passes down the field, that can score, and their defense is respectable, which are the tried and true fundamental factors of a Stormers upset. This is something I'm still workshopping, so we'll come up with a better name for it. But you need some of those things and to be able to pull off an upset. So Maryland could do it. I wish this one was at Maryland, but they were able to keep it close last year.
Yeah, they're going to need, I mean, they definitely showed signs of improvement because under Mike Locksley until last year, their first two games, they lost 73-14 in 2019 and 66-17 in 2021. But last year, 43-30 in a game that was much closer than 13 points at the end.
Yeah, it's like sometimes when you're horribly scarred in a chemical fire, that builds character. So you come back. Yeah, so this is actually secretly a good thing for Maryland that they got beat by 66. I'm going to spin this.
Your second chemical fire reference this week.
Won't be the last. Oh, man. All right. Let's talk some Wolverines in the NFL, shall we, sir?
Let's do it. We're going to talk Hutch again, or we already waxed poetic enough on that this week?
We did wax poetic on him. I don't know if we mentioned that his first sack, I believe, or his only sack was on John Runyon. There was some Michigan on Michigan crime that occurred in that game. I both cried and laughed and wept in the same moment. That was nice. Just still good to see Runyon out there.
Yeah, it was kind of like when Mo Hurst got one past Ben Bredesen, or it was by Mason Cole, excuse me. And I was like, oh, man, this one kind of hurts, but it always feels good to watch Mo Hurst celebrate with the belly rub after the sack.
Yeah, he had a great game this week for Cleveland, too. A Cleveland team that I can't bring myself to watch. Can't stomach the watch to keep with that pun. But yeah, I'm glad to see that he's still showing out. Were you able to watch that Cleveland game?
Yeah, it was frustrating because I benched Lamar in fantasy, but not to be like the Jahmyr Gibbs complainers of the world. I'm just going to keep it moving. But the game I did enjoy watching this week, I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this, was the Houston Texans.
Let's go. Let's go. I turned on the NFL Sunday Ticket. And I was like, let's give this a go. Let's give this a little a test ride. Happened to flip in on Houston Texans versus Pittsburgh, a game I would never in a million years check out just because I wanted to see if Nico Collins would show out. And he did. He did not disappoint. 7 receptions, 168, 2 touchdowns. We've been screaming this from rooftops for weeks now, but like, did we even undersell it? Like, could this dude be an absolute star in the NFL? I said he's for sure an NFL wide receiver. Is he a star NFL yes. wide receiver?
Yes, he is. I mean, the connection and the chemistry he and Stroud are showing is very advanced for this. I mean, 4-game sample size into a career together. It's so nice because you and I felt so bad for Nico kind of just being left alone on an island. But D'Amico Ryans is doing incredible things with that organization and just really being the adult in the room, empowering all of his players. Seems like they all have a lot of fun playing together. And I mean, we call out our wins, we're going to call out our losses. Like, I did not think CJ Stroud would ever be this good in the NFL ever. And he looks in complete command of an offense and looks like a grown up out there. So, I mean, shout out to him, shout out to Nico.
Facts. You're absolutely right. Count me as one of the ones that CJ actually, no, we said CJ Stroud could do it. My whole thing with CJ Stroud has been, he can't do it in the cold. Once you hit him, that is
good thing. He's in Houston in a dome, baby.
He's in Houston in a dome. I was like, yeah, that'll work, because once he comes up to Lambeau, no, that ain't going to be it. Or if he got drafted to the Packers, I would not like it, but no, he likes it where it's nice and warm, cool and comfortable. And if he wants to go make a career for Nico Collins, let's all join hands across the state of Ohio and Michigan for a moment. That's great. That's fantastic. Let's keep rooting for it. And Texans haven't been good since like the Andre Johnson era. So like
they were good. Deshaun Watson, they were pretty good. I mean, went to second round of the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of the same era. But I guess that it feels like it's longer ago than it was, but it was really probably like 4 years ago. Really not that long ago. But yeah, Deshaun Watson's had a bit of a character change since then. There's been some developments. Some developments have happened. Some new shit has come to light. Dax Hill for Cincinnati, 8 tackles and a pick for a Cincinnati team that I can't make heads or tails of. They're in serious trouble here if Joe Burrow can't get right, but he's looking awesome. Currently projected by ESPN to finish the season with 9 interceptions. I don't know if Yeah, seems all right. I don't know if we can track that and consider that gospel, but seems like a good stat.
It's so awesome to see. It kind of seems like it's the year from hell from Cincinnati. Like, you kind of wonder if they would have been better off just sitting Burrow for the first 4 games and then bringing him back like fully healthy instead of kind of just like half-assing, like he can play or he can't play. So it sucks to see it right now. Like, it is nice to see Dax Hill shine out though. Like, we knew this was coming. This is one of our, like, there's no way this guy is going to suck at the next level kind of players. And it's really awesome to see it come by, I mean, full speed already in just year 2.
Yeah, like you said, we celebrate our wins and our losses. We're certainly going to take a victory lap for the Dax Hill one, but just how good he could be remains to be seen. And I just want them to make the playoffs. I kind of like Cincy, and I want this guy to be introduced to household names, just like Hutchinson is starting to be introduced to household names as a household name, excuse me. Josh Uche, maybe not a household name, but another sack for him, continuing on with his pretty impressive pace really that he's been on as well. So Wolverine edge rushers continue to lead the way. Love that there was some conversation going on Sunday and even on Thursday about Michigan being defensive line. The national audience really starting to pick up on this. Just really awesome work, because when you and I first started covering Michigan, the NFL conversation was not that fun. It was like a lot of Brady and like, hey, Brandon Graham's still kicking around, and like, you know, the occasional tight end might work his way onto the field or something. But now you look around and Wolverines in the NFL are starting to make this a national conversation, which is a lot of fun.
It's nice to see, even like watching the Lions game last week and just like having a fear of Rashawn Gary because he's a good edge rusher on the Packers. Like, this is kind of cool. Like, I love to see him put it together. I love to see how like littered it is. I mean, you can go back and do the history of like Wolverines being drafted year by year, and then you can visibly see the Harbaugh effect. It goes from like maybe four or five guys getting selected to like 8, 10, 15. And it's like, it goes all over the place. Like it's just a trackable like increase. And it's like, it's so cool to see, because no matter what game you tune into now, it's a better chance than not, you're going to see a Michigan player.
Yeah, exactly. And it's tough to really see it as it's happening, because you're like, oh, you know, cool, Cesar Ruiz is on New Orleans now. But then, like, when you look at it from 30,000 feet, you're like, man, I watch a lot of Wolverines on my Sundays now, too. Like, how great is this? And yeah, if you were watching Green Bay versus Detroit on offense, you were watching John Runyon. On defense, you were watching Rashawn Gary. And then on the other side, you're watching Graham Glasgow and you're watching Aiden Hutchinson. And there's other teams like the freaking Patriots where you're watching even more than that. So yeah, it's just been a lot of fun. So we'll continue to touch on that as these guys show out. Excited to see where we end this year, particularly as an edge rushing group, to further my agenda that Michigan is actually just lineman you, not just offensive or defensive. It's just both sides of the ball. So it's been great. Anything else? Oh, I had one other NFL thing I wanted to touch on. We are officially on Caleb Williams and the NFC North watch. Bears need to win a damn game, and then we need Carolina to win a damn game. I do not want to have to see Caleb Williams twice a year. That dude's a problem. All right. Yeah. The Bears need to get it together and win a game or two. Can you do that?
I don't know if they can, man. Like, I mean, 0-17 might be on the table. Like, this team is really bad, mismanaged, like a lot of things. If they have Carolina's draft picks, they might have two cracks at the top five. Like, ugh. Yeah.
And Marvin Harrison in the division.
Ugh. Yeah. Well, they need more help than that. They need to get a lineman, get Joe Alt from Notre Dame or something. But God, I mean, they are awful right now all over the place. So maybe Arizona can out-tank them, like not win another game. Hopefully the Bears can scratch and claw to one victory. But I'm with you, man. Caleb Williams watch in terms of fear is a very real thing.
Don't want it. Don't want to see it. No. All right. Minnesota this week, sir. It is a night game. We travel to Minnesota, a place that can be a little bit tricky. If you think back to the goal line fourth down stand that Michigan had, you think back to the Kalik Hudson game. There's been some tricky ones in here. This is a different Minnesota team turning over a lot of the guys from their 9-4 team. They were 5-4 in the Big Ten last year. This is PJ Fleck's seventh year overall, 44-27. Yeah, that's
solid.
Really good. Yeah, like really good. And that's 74-49 overall, if you take his overall coaching record, just like a really good head coach. And yeah, they turn over a lot of the guys. Gone are the Muhammad Ibrahims of the world, as well as some of those electric pass catchers. In is Arthur Kalikokmanis and Darius Taylors. I know you've been able to watch this team a little bit. You and I have at least seen, I've seen a whole game's worth of Minnesota at this point. What are your overall thoughts on this Minnesota team?
I mean, they're built very similarly to Nebraska. Like, it's eerie at some points. I really think if Jeff Sims didn't play in week one, Nebraska beats them and probably beats them by 10. Like, they had every business winning that game. You even talked about during that, like, how just evident it was that Matt Rhule's a better coach than Scott Frost and what he brings to the table for Nebraska. Like, Fleck, been there, seasoned winner, like, understands what to do, weathered the storm in that game, and found a way to win. I think that's what really good coaches do. And this team, if they can run the football, they have one of the best offensive line coaches in the country. They're going to do that, and they're going to be tough to stop. But if Minnesota can't run the football under PJ Fleck, that's been a recipe for disaster.
Yep, absolutely. My first takeaway is when I watched that Nebraska game was the one I watched start to finish was, boy, are they going to miss Mo Ibrahim. Darius Taylor has started to emerge and fill that void. A really good running back. We don't know if we're going to see him this week. We will see, not Arthur, as I just recently called him, Ethan Kalikokmanis. Love that I could get the last name right, but called him Arthur Kalikokmanis, the Greek rifle, who's numbers for 2023 look very similar to his numbers from 2022. He's completing 58% of his passes, about 6 yards of completion, 5 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. I mean, this is pretty much what we saw from him last year. The interceptions still remain a problem. I mean, 4 picks through this many games with only 5 touchdowns suggests a little bit of inaccuracy. He also doesn't have quite the pass catching receivers that he's had, as well as tight ends. I do like Brevin Spanford, their tight end, but it's not a great pass catching lineup. So they can't really pass the ball that well. I'm not certainly not afraid of this pass offense, which is like, what do we say, 125th in the country, number one. Yeah, 121 in passing offense at 150 yards per game. Injured running back that they want to build their entire offensive attack on. and an okay offensive line, it doesn't sound like an offense that's built to upset Michigan to me.
Yeah. Passing offense updated 125. So they fell last week against Louisiana. The one good thing and for Minnesota is that even despite being without their star freshman running back, they got a good showing last week by another freshman. I got his name right here. It was Zach Evans. He averaged over five yards a carry, 15 for 85, like really helped set up a nice fluent day from the Greek rifle. He was 12 of 14, two touchdowns, still threw a pick. So I think he's going to give some opportunities to this Michigan secondary to finally get their feet underneath them. And like, listen, this is a reset year for Minnesota. Yeah. Like last year was the year, kind of got bit by the injury bug a little bit, but like last year was the big year for them. Chris Ottman Bell is somehow still in college. I don't understand it. I think he's a sixth or seventh year receiver there, but we've been talking about him forever. And as one-sided as this rivalry has been, like the last, I think Michigan's 25-2 in the last 27 meetings. Like the last loss occurred in 2014, 2005, and then you have to go all the way back to 87 for another one. Like Michigan has really dominated this. Harbaugh has especially had flex number, like with what he's done to him, even go to 2020 with Joe Milton when we were putting him in the Heisman conversation after that first week in the COVID year. So
didn't happen.
Hey, there's no record of it. So it's just, I just don't think Minnesota has the horses. Like it could be a wacky game. I think the rat poison theory, though, is pretty prevalent here.
Expand on that.
So Nick Saban always talks about rat poison as praise. So like you get the praise, everyone tells you how good you are. Kind of think Michigan after UNLV. Man, this team is so good. JJ's so efficient. They can kill anybody. And then you go play Bowling Green, you throw three picks and the game struggles and it's wacky. It's up and down. It's inconsistent. Like that's the biggest fear here. The last 2 years, Michigan has struggled in their second of back-to-back road games in week five and week six. 2 years ago, we all know what happened in Nebraska. Needed Jake Moody to go superhuman because the red zone offense couldn't execute. Last year against Indiana, Mike Hart has the health scare on the sideline. Michigan and Indiana are tied at the half. Michigan pulls away in the second half, and that game was locked up even 10 apiece at halftime. So you could see some wacky things here. Could be a rat poison game, but I really anticipate this team and their culture to at least come in focused enough to weather a first quarter or a first half storm.
Well said. I totally agree that the only things I worry about are intrinsic rather than extrinsic. 100%. I do not worry about the Minnesota faithful and that atmosphere, which is a perfectly great atmosphere. Seems like a fun place for a ball game. But if we can handle Nebraska, if we can handle at Wisconsin, this is not at that level. JJ's already shown. I mean, we can talk about the TCU game, but the way he responded in that in a much bigger situation, you know, Big Ten championships, Ohio State, we've seen this team in much bigger scenarios. So at Minnesota shouldn't scare them. The rat poison thing is a well taken point. I could see that, particularly coming off your best game of the season against Nebraska, where anything we were going to call was going to work in that game. Yeah. There was really nothing that was not working against Nebraska. So I think you're right. I think you hit it on the head. The things to worry about, got to take control of the ball, got to shut down their rushing attack, force them to pass. And if they do, the Greek rifle, as you mentioned, not sure he's quite earned that nickname, but no one said the rifle was accurate. It just shoots. It still fires. She's still got some gunpowder in her. So I do think that they will be able to score more than Nebraska or Rutgers do. I think their first team offense can get something on the board, particularly early on in this one, to keep things close. But the defense is going to win the day, the Michigan defense. Any other thoughts on the Minnesota offense before we go to the other side of the ball?
Do you think this is the first game Michigan's first team defense gives up a touchdown?
I do. This is about the time of the year where it would happen. And I think if it does happen, it's that PJ Fleck has a really well done scripted drive. And he's watched enough Michigan tape at this point to find something, to find a seam. Like there has been some missed tackles in the back end. It's due to just kind of like laziness or general malaise in the back end. And it's a little later in games, but it's possible that Michigan's a little hyped up early on in this one. So I'll say that the first team offense does score this week, but then that's going to be about it. How about you?
Yeah, I think so too. I can see Minnesota getting to double digits in this game, which is, I mean, sounds like such an arrogant thing to say, but it's like based off what Michigan has done, like, I mean, it's a place to start. So I do think they'll get there though. Like you said, like Fleck's going to have a trick or two up his sleeve, something here or there to give his team some kind of like schematic advantage, whether it's momentary or not.
Yeah, I think, you know, we were a little bit dubious of PJ Fleck coming in. I would say we've both come firmly on board that he's a really good coach. And I mean, who knows? You give that guy an Auburn or something, it could be really good. Or maybe this is exactly where he belongs, as at a place like Minnesota, where he can take them to being a really competent team. And that's just who PJ Fleck is. There are way worse things you could be than a really competent head football coach at the University of Minnesota. So I respect PJ Fleck. A little weird. I mean, seems like he's got some weird Fleckisms.
Strange guy.
But I mean, Jim Harbaugh, like talking to kids and being like, hey, you didn't read that Army book about armies marching better when hungry? All right. Talking to a 7-year-old.
I was like, son, I need you to quit being stupid. All right. Try that next time. Yeah. It's like, most like good college coaches are a little quirky and weird. And like, you know, it's like you always love your own. So like we love Harbaugh. I'm sure Minnesota fans for the most part love Fleck the same way.
Exactly. Let's move over to the defense where there's some guys I really like. This is a strong defense. It's not as good as some Minnesota defenses of past years, but they just turn out like really good guys that I would like to have on my team. This year it's Tyler Newbin, their safety, who I really, really like. I don't know if I would take him or Cooper DeJean first in a draft, but I like them both. Newbin's been a beast for him. He's all over the field, so expect him to do some stuff. He's going to probably be tasked with backing up on Roman Wilson, I would guess, but they're going to need him in the run game. He's going to be all over, but he can't do it on his own. As far as other guys on the defense, Henderson in the backfield there had a pick last week. Chris Collins had a pick I'm looking at the North Carolina game where they picked off Drake May. So they've got some guys in the back end, but you know, replacing some dudes in the front seven, replacing quite a bit actually in the front seven. What's your take on this defense overall?
I mean, there are 133 teams in FBS and Minnesota is 62nd in total defense. So the definition of average, like
literally the mid.
I mean, they are okay at stopping the run and they are okay at stopping the pass. So it's like, if they can give Michigan some fits in the front seven, then they're going to have a chance to get McCarthy into some throws, maybe take a chance here and Newbin baits him into something to get an interception, get that upset momentum really churning their way. But it's a tall task now with what we saw from Michigan's offensive line last week to assume that Minnesota's defensive line can generate that kind of movement or havoc or make Michigan more one-dimensional.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's Newbin, it's Henderson, and then there's on the defensive line Maverick Baranowski, which is incredible name, and dude can play too, so watch him on the defensive line. Yeah, I agree. It's a couple guys and then working in a lot of new guys, a lot of younger dudes there. And like you said, what is there to be said about a defense that falls in the exact middle? Like they are neither hot nor cold, so we spit them out.
Well, like they're 59th in sacks, so again, right in the middle. Tackle for loss are a little lower at 110, but it's like pretty much every statistic you measure this defense by, it's right in the middle. And I guess in a rebuilding year, I guess that's kind of where you want to be if you can't be towards the top with all the new pieces.
I'm with you. So the Minnesota blueprint for an upset, early turnover, early two touchdowns, because we know one touchdown isn't going to beat this. So you got to get like two on the board early. Hope to keep it around 27-28 late in the game.
Again, I keep saying Michigan's starting defense hasn't given up a touchdown, just completely forgetting the Rutgers game like it didn't happen. So apologies for that, because I got the touchdown like on the second play of the game. But that's what they need. So they need some turnovers. They need a quick strike like on a slant or something like that to really break it open. And then they need maybe like a muffed kick, something tricky in the special teams area like that to swing it, or another big play, maybe perhaps on defense with a tip ball. Just they need this game to be as chaotic as possible. They need complete chaos in this game to really muddy it up and get Michigan out of sorts and off schedule.
I'm with you there. Also, don't ever expect me to correct you when you say something incorrect about Michigan history. That's why you're here. I have the memory of Guy Pearce from Memento, so I'm not gonna be able to back you up on this.
I said it on the other pod and I was like, oh, that's not right. Is that did happen? It's like, I keep forgetting that happened, but you know, can't forget all bad things.
Yeah, no, it's fine. But I know you'll correct me when I say something out of pocket. So it's great. This is good balance here. Yeah, I totally see it the same way, though, man. They got to make it weird early on. They got to try to find a way to get in JJ's head, which the Zen Buddhism in him, it's just not going to happen. The man will be at peace with the world and all around him. I expect him to keep doing what he does. It's so crazy to look at his QBR, his passer rating by game. That Bowling Green game is such an anomaly. Such an anomaly, and I will expect it to remain as such. I think that they're going to keep doing what they're doing. They're just getting started. It wouldn't surprise me. I would say more likely Michigan blows them out than more likely Minnesota pulls this upset. Would you agree?
100%. Like, you look at all the numbers, like a team that's like tries to do what Nebraska did, it's going to be really difficult to beat Michigan at their own game and control the offensive line. One stat to keep an eye on in this that could swing things. Minnesota is number 131 in the country in opponents' kick returns. They allow over 30 yards per kick return. So I could see Jay Harbaugh licking his chops at this one to just set something up, set up a big return and kind of break something there. Like, get Khalil Mullings running full speed, see what happens there. But no, man, just like, if you can't pass the ball efficiently, if you don't have that kind of established balance into your offense, it's really hard for me to see this game even being close.
Cologne Mullings at full speed hitting the earth is basically what killed the dinosaurs. We can't have that. Like, you cannot get Cologne Mullings up to speed.
No.
It's going to kill someone.
Yeah, like that. I mean, the way he's running the football right now, I would not want to be in his way. So keep an eye on kick returns this week.
Yeah, maybe get some Maj Morgan, somebody in there, get a little bit spicy with it. I like it. I like where your head's at there. Minnesota also third least penalized team in the league. So it goes to the well-coaching theory that we had there. Michigan second behind Army. So it's Army, Michigan, Minnesota, just discipline at the top. God, I love it. Waking up in the morning and making my bed, just making a nice smoothie.
I believe this was the first game for Michigan since the 66. I think it was in the 60s that they went without having a penalty. Like, that's incredible.
Wow. That's crazy. We'll have to come back and verify that stat. If that's true, that is absolutely wild. But yeah, this Michigan team has been extremely, extremely crisp, which credit to the whole coaching staff for withstanding the Jim Harbaugh fake suspension and still being one of the least penalized teams in the country. So props to this whole coaching staff. That's been incredible. All right, sir, let's get to some predictions and some players of the game. I was listening back on our last podcast. I don't listen to them all because I hate the sound of my own voice, but I don't like how we've been doing predictions because we've been predicting like, oh, the tackles will have a good game. I want to see that. So we're going to predict who we would like to see have a good game, but then we're predicting who will be the man of the match, kind of like who will be the dudes that actually do it. Cause I want to be right too. Cause I mean, we would have taken somebody on the defensive line last week for sure. So we're going to do it both ways on this one. And also I'm going to go first because you going first, I'm always like playing off of your predictions. So
floor is yours.
All right, sir. So we already talked about what it's going to take for Minnesota to make this weird. I think that early on they could, and I could see something being given up, but then this Michigan defense is really going to settle in. And on offense, I think you're going to see more of the same. Balance has been the name of the attack. That will continue. So I'm thinking Corum has two touchdowns in him. I'm thinking that Edwards finally gets like a pass going, something like that. I think we're going to need to be a little bit more balanced and see more than whatever it was, 156 yards passing that JJ had last week. I think you'll actually need to explore the studio space a little bit more. So who I would like to see have a good game in this one, Donovan Edwards. I would like to see Donovan Edwards get going in the passing game. And I would like, I mean, this seems like there's always somebody against Minnesota that just has a career game. And it's like the Khalik Hudson game. And there's been some really fun ones. The Donovan Edwards, wasn't it against Minnesota that he went off? I'm thinking of Edwards against like Maryland.
Yep, 2021.
Thinking of Edwards against Maryland, but yeah, something similar to that game here against Minnesota on offense. And I think that on defense, who I would like to see have a good game to get things going would be Will Johnson for sure. Like, I don't know how much they're going to test him in this one. The Greek rifle is more like a Greek pellet gun or like, you know, something mildly lethal. So I don't know how much they're going to test Will Johnson in this one, but who I think will be the man of the match on offense, give me JJ. On defense, give me 1 second here. I want to get this right. Who's due? I think it's going to be Nah, Chris Jenkins is too boring. It's the Jalen Harrell game. It's the Jalen Harrell game.
I like that. Both score prediction.
Score prediction. Yeah, absolutely. So I think Michigan's going to, let me go 38-13. 38-13 Michigan in this one. I do think they will get on the board early, hold them to a field goal right around the half. Maybe things are a little bit closer than you'd like around the half, and then Michigan leans on them. So 38-13 for me, sir. The floor is yours.
I like that a lot. Players I want to see have a good game are going to be Rod Moore on defense. I'd love to see him get back to the first team now. If you got to play a lot of snaps last week with the second, third, and reserves, as he could finally just fully get his sea legs underneath him for the season. So I'd love to see Rod Moore have a good game on offense. I'd love to see Cornelius Johnson have a big one. Like, spread the love around a little bit. I'd love to see him have that. But offensively, I'm going to go with Donovan Edwards does have a big one. They made a concerted effort to get him into the rhythm, gave him a bunch of carries early last week. I like the way they divided the carries more in the Nebraska game. It wasn't so much every other snap. It was more like, let's go five here, five there. Gives both players a chance to get involved in the passing and the rushing game. So I love that. And defensively, let's not get cute about it. Mikey Sainer still has two picks on the year, has a touchdown. I think he's going to have a big one, especially like coming in to help stop the run. The Greek rifle is going to give this team several opportunities to have an interception. So I would be shocked if Michigan leaves Minneapolis with under two picks in this game. So watch out for the turnovers. Michigan's going to cruise in this one. I think it could be tight for two possessions at the most. I don't see it being a full quarter with as disciplined as they've played. There is room for the rat poison theory, but I think too cultured, too smart, too veteran laden, Michigan wins 42-10.
Love this. Yeah. Love it. Absolutely. Is there a case for this because of how close everything has been on the defensive line? Could you make a case if you were voting today that Mikey Sainer still has been the best player on this defense?
I think it's still somebody on the defensive line. The defensive line has just been too good. I think I'd go with the best player on it, which is Chris Jenkins. But Sainer still has been exciting. He's been the best player in the secondary, or if you include the linebackers, like in that group, well, he's been the best one. But, man, the defensive line in Michigan this year has been just unbelievably good. Like, I mean, exceptionally generationally good.
You and I mean, I'm never going to look forward to the end of the season because I'm going to savor every single like Rutgers minute with Greg Crippen playing at center. I love it all, but I can't wait to start talking historically about what we're witnessing with this team. It's going to be a lot of fun because we're setting some benchmarks, and it's going to be that kind of a team, that kind of a defense, that kind of an offense where we're going to be able to talk about them amongst some of the greatest in Michigan history. Glad to be here talking about it with you, my friend. Glad that you are all listening. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure that you like, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever. Give us a follow on Twitter at Mason Brew. You can follow Andy and myself. I'm at JStorm303. He's at UMAndrewB. Make sure you stay tuned. I don't know if it's going to be next week or the week after. We will have a reaction podcast coming up that will go up on YouTube either after Minnesota or after Indiana. We'll keep you posted on that, but make sure you come to Mason Brew for all your Michigan needs. I'm Jared. That's Andy. This is Out of the Blue. And we'd like to remind you that wherever you go, go blue.